John Williams Show. I'm Frank Fontana. Sitting next to me is my lovely wife, Sherry Fontana.
Hello.
Good to be back. Filling in for John on the stream here. Sox playing. I'm not sure what the score is. And by the way, I don't have my headphones on. This is the first time I'm doing the radio show without headphones on, which is different.
So I'm sitting where Bill was. So does he stand the whole time?
Does it smell?
Not at all.
No.
But I think he stands the whole time, I'm assuming.
And do you feel shorter?
You were just talking so loud in my ear, like it was blasting.
Yeah, there's a little knob that you just adjust that down.
Yeah, I got that. Okay, cool.
It's good to be back. It's been a little while since we've been behind the mic. It was a couple weeks ago we were filling in for John.
Yeah, I know you love having me sitting next to you.
And I love having you in my life, period. Despite what you may think, I do love it. Thanks,
Jella. I'm excited to be back.
Yeah. We got a fun show. We had a little break. Sherry and I went on a little mini vacation. So is it a staycation if you stay like within a certain miles of your home, or is it only if you stay in the same state? Do you know that?
So I don't know that officially, but I think a staycation is you stay in your state.
So,
like in your town and in your state, I think it is.
So Michigan or Indiana is not a staycation.
That is a vacation.
Although it was an hour and 15 minutes away, we felt like we were in paradise.
Absolutely.
Can we say exactly where we went or not really? Because we don't want people to go there.
Well, I mean, if you want to be that stingy with it. But no, Michigan City, Indiana, they have a lot of area where you can, you know, stay on the beach or rent houses there. And it was really awesome. I had a friend who has been telling me about this place for years, and she kept saying, you know, go there. You're going to love it. The beach is beautiful. And she was right. Like, I did feel like I was in Florida on the beach with the ocean.
It was definitely a good call, unexpected in a lot of ways, because I did feel like I really was just like, I don't know what to expect. It's Indiana. Never been to Indiana.
No, and you. What have you been to Indiana for, really? Probably nothing other than
driving through it.
Yeah. And I didn't know what to expect either. Like, I've been to Michigan, but that's... But how about the most fascinating part is you're in Indiana, but then you drive, like, 9 minutes, and then you're into Michigan, New Buffalo, and it's a different time. Like,
yeah, we kept getting the time screwed up. I thought the whole time we were... Because I didn't look at the clock, and you should thank me because I barely looked at my phone or my computer.
I
should thank you. Because you forced me. You forced me not
to. Well, I just thought it would be a good idea to
detach. It was nice
to
unplug. A digital detox.
But so we booked this beach house.
Yeah.
Not really knowing what to expect. I knew it wasn't going to be like a beach house, very secluded. And I knew that it would be a little community, but I wasn't sure to what extent. So when we first got there.
It was weird. You know, I'll be honest with you. Like, when you think of vacation, you think of, you know, like going somewhere far maybe, and you're, you know, got your own little place, and you can kind of detach from people a little bit. Some place. I mean, if you go to Disney, obviously not, you know, like, or you go to a busy...
Or a huge resort.
Or a huge resort.
There are a lot of people. I think we just probably didn't know what to expect, and then it was a community. So when we first got there, the house wasn't ready. We were kind of, you know, when you first get to your destination, and either your house, your hotel room is not ready, and you're in that in-between stage of, like, I can't unpack, I can't get settled, so you're kind of like,
and on top of it, you have to pee really bad. That sucked. So we were locked out of the house. They had to call a maintenance guy to come in. And poor Sherry, an hour and 15 minutes, and they couldn't hold it anymore, and she was going to break into the house somehow. But finally, at the last minute, we were saved by the...
No, really, basically, I had to go so bad, and all you kept saying was... We're on vacation. Like, you just enjoy
it.
I'm like, seriously? Can you let me go to the bathroom first and then unwind? You don't even have to go really bad. But anyway.
Yeah, once we got in, it was, we kind of still had this feeling of like, wow, like there's a lot of houses. And it was a big house. It was like a 4-bedroom house. You could fit 10 people in it. We ended up having friends come and go. But, you know, I just wasn't sure about the idea of like being right next to somebody. You know, like we left a neighborhood to kind of get away, but we ended up back in a neighborhood. But the beauty of this place was it was like Key West. So every house had a different color. Every house had tin roofs, and you drove around in golf carts, and there was a little cafe inside, like a little ice cream shop type of thing. So you literally felt transported to Key West in the middle of Indiana.
Which was really nice, because sometimes you're on vacation, and if you go to a more secluded area, especially with children, like you can't jump. You have to get in the car, go to drive to wherever you have to go or whatever you have to get. But this was nice because if you needed something or just wanted to get out for like a 20-minute break, you can get in the golf cart, go to the little pier and fish. Like it was really like a beach community, I felt.
Totally. And I'm so happy you found it and our friend referred it. The kids truly enjoyed it. But, you know, it left me thinking, like, you know, when people vacation, what do you, you know, what's your expectation? You know, because there's a couple things. One, vacationing with kids, is it really a vacation? I mean, you still had to cook because we were in a house. You still had to clean up. And the kids still were kids, and they need you and need me, and they constantly wanted to be entertained and do stuff. So you're almost like at home, but in a prettier backdrop.
Well, I think the beauty where we were is that, oh, that's true. You have the children there, and they're so wanting different things, and I was cooking and cleaning up, but I was still able to go to the beach, and then I was still able to have some downtime. So that was not a whole lot of downtime, but that was probably the difference, is the environment was more relaxing than
I would say.
Home.
I mean, considering you could literally walk to the beach in like 5 minutes or less was awesome. So yeah, that was that. That was really good. It was. I feel refreshed. Do you feel refreshed?
Yes, I feel 75% refreshed.
Good. You know, I learned a couple things about you on the vacation that we'll talk about. Are we taking a little break here, Ella? I know you're eating right now, so I don't want to bug you. So let's do this. We'll take a little break, and when we come back, we'll set the show up, and we're going to talk about a couple things. And maybe I'll throw this question out now. If you've been on vacation with your significant other, is there anything that came out in that vacation that you were like, huh, my spouse likes this thing? I had no idea. So think about that. And I think we have a different text line. It's the same, 312-981-7200. Shoot us a text if you've been on vacation recently with your spouse or your friends, and all of a sudden, they do something they don't normally do. Like, I don't know, crocheting or something like that. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the John Williams Show. I'm Frank Fontana. And that is
Sherry Fontana
sitting in for John. You guys are listening here on the stream while the White Sox are taking over the airwaves. You know, I do love that voice you do, Ella. I'm not going to make you do it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Do you enjoy doing it?
Yeah, actually. I love doing imitations of absolutely everything and everyone, so I don't mind.
Can you do one with me? Yeah, I'd like to.
Sure. Let me just get in the zone. So, I'm here with my wife,
my middle name is Frankie, so
I'm under pressure. I'm here with my wife, whose middle name is Frankie.
There you go. That's pretty good. I like it.
But really quick, before we get into this, can we talk about your shoes?
Oh, sure. Oh,
God. Girl
sure.
Talk. Here we go.
Yeah.
Amazing shoes. As soon as I walked in, I said, wow, those shoes are sweet. And so I give
what
her a compliment.
What do they look like? Give some context to
and wait,
it,
hold
please.
On. So I give her a compliment on the shoes, and what was your response?
They're from Paris.
I mean, really? That's amazing.
She's fancy. I mean,
love it.
And yeah, they're silver and black polka dot kitten heels with
kitten
a pointed
heels?
Toe. Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Like what? Like kitten
like
heels?
Like they're like the hardest shoe you'll ever walk on. You wouldn't expect that from a kitten heel. But,
why do girls do that to themselves? I don't understand.
It's not that bad. You get used to it.
So when you're older, your feet look like crinkled like Fritos, and like your toes curl up. And
I don't think that's the case.
I've seen a lot of older women toes in my family. They don't look too good.
No, I don't know if that's the reason that their feet look like that now, but I'd love to ask them and see.
Well, they'll be here soon. You can ask.
Elif, continue wearing the shoes. They're amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So just to answer a couple of these texts, we left off talking about vacations, and we just came back from a little week-long break with the kids up in Michigan City, and people were asking, where did we go? We were up at this place called Beach Walk, which is kind of this Key West community. Somebody just texted in from the 219, did you go to Blue Chip? Why? Did you see me there? Yes, I did. It was fun. I actually liked Blue, so there's two casinos nearby there.
So you did go to Blue Chip.
I did.
And I did not. I was home with the kids watching a movie.
Because your parents forced me to go.
Which leads us into the discussion about finding out what your spouse does on vacation or your friends, something, what were you talking about?
Different, something unusual.
So what were you going to say? Because I'm assuming this is about me, but
it was.
I was not doing something unusual because I was home watching a movie with the kids while Frank was at Blue Chip. But I chose to because I really wanted to make them popcorn.
Because I had to escort her parents. That's why. They needed an escort.
So what was I doing? Because I know this is about me. What was I doing that you didn't expect?
The question I pose is, when you're on vacation with your spouse, friends, or loved ones, and you're there for a little bit of time, and all of a sudden they bust out something that you had no idea they were into, right? Something unusual. So we're in our trip, and my wife decides to stop at a little shop in downtown New Buffalo, and she buys a puzzle. A puzzle. Through the 10 years I've known her, I've never once seen her put a puzzle on a table and do a puzzle. But on vacation, all of a sudden, she busts out a puzzle. And that probably took up about 30% of her time on the vacation. So much so that it was obsessive when her parents came. Her mom got into it, and they were both staring at this thing and while polishing off a bottle of wine. And frustration that we can't find the right pieces. So to me, it struck me as like, huh, I never knew my wife was into puzzles. What things do people hide from each other
that
get exposed?
That's so therapeutic.
Is it?
And wine?
You're in a beach town with a beach 5 minutes away, and you're playing inside on a puzzle.
Well, maybe you don't feel like going out yet.
True.
Well, here is the truth. Okay, this is my truth. I would have much rather been at the beach. But every time we went to the beach, Frank got restless after about an hour.
Which you know about.
And then the kids got restless. And then so mom had to pack up everything and head back to the house. So, yes, I bought a puzzle, which I honestly have been, my mom always did puzzles, so I do enjoy them. But for the last 7 or 8 years, I've been nonstop taking care of the children and not have been able to do a puzzle. So now that they're getting a little bit older and I have a little bit more free time, instead of like, you know, going shopping or reading, for me, a puzzle is therapeutic, but you're also using your brain. And especially if the puzzle is inspiring, it's worth doing and seeing it come together. So
yes,
I did enjoy it.
Because Potoskis are inspiring.
Potoskis.
That's a real thing, but Elif, I don't know if you know this. You know what a Potoski is?
I'm Googling it right now, and I came up with Joe Nick Potoski, so I don't know what
No, Joe wasn't there that day. But, yeah, it's a flower, I think, right?
So, the
puzzle was a whole bunch of flowers.
So here's the thing. The puzzle was a bunch of flowers. It was petals and Potoskis. That was the name of the puzzle. And a Potoski is a type of stone.
Oh, it is.
So it was a stone.
Where was the stone in the whole thing?
It was the gray
Okay.
part of the entire gray part of the puzzle.
So we digress. The point here is that I discovered my wife likes puzzles on vacation. And you know, it's one of those things you learn in those kind of moments. So I wonder, like, what other people out there have learned on vacations? Give us a text, 312-917-200. We'll read them as long as they're appropriate. Or if they're inappropriate, still send it, because I'd like to laugh quietly.
Well, and I think everyone has a different personality, of course. And I feel like at home, you are able to detach a little bit more. And because you're not a mother, obviously you're the dad, and
yes.
I feel like you're able to detach a little bit more if you want to go to the gym, if you want to go for a walk, whatever it is that is your interest, you are able to do probably easier than I am, which is not negative, it's actually positive. But for me, I have a harder time detaching when I'm at home because I'm tending to the kids so much. So I didn't really learn anything new about you because you pretty much do what you do at home on vacation.
Which is
you're on vacation every day.
Yeah, right.
I'm kidding about that.
No way. Anyway, but you did have. I see you were on your phone a little bit. I mean, you were surfing like Instagram here and there and checking out like you know.
I really didn't have great service, which was amazing for me.
Yeah, the service was terrible up there,
which I loved.
I spent maybe 10% of the time on social, just looking because of the podcast, which I will be talking about later. Danny the Car Bomb Carcillo from the Stanley Cup winning Blackhawks, is going to be joining us at 2 o'clock. Danny is a guest, the very first guest on my new podcast, The Human Renovation Project, which dropped today at noon. It is live on WGN Plus on Spotify. You can go check it out. Danny's going to be joining us to talk a little bit about that interview. A huge revelation from him, and he's so candid in this. You heard bits and pieces of it, Sherry.
I did, and honestly, it's amazing, and I wanted to hear every bit of it.
Thank
and
you.
The promos for it, you know, do it justice because they're
you
great.
Tingles when you
and
watch.
It's amazing, and his story is amazing, and I think people honestly will love it. So check it out.
Yeah, it'd be good. And Phil Vitale is going to be joining us. Good old Phil, talking about what triple threat dining. Ooh, I like it. I'm starving. He'll be coming around 1:35 after the news. But before we do that, I just want to bring this up because we're talking about Instagram. Do you ever feel like there's too many, like, quotes on Instagram? Do you feel like we're over-quoted on Instagram? What I mean by that is, like, you know, life is like a box of chocolates. You know, eat as many as you can. Whatever. You know, whatever the quote is that is the inspirational quote of the day.
Well, I think if there's a lot of it out there.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, there was a time, probably, you know, last year where I was going through a tough period. And so I would find quotes that would resonate. And so I'd follow, you know, the outlet that was posting that.
Right.
And it's funny because now I actually had to delete and unfollow some of them because it doesn't relate to
it's
my
too
life
much.
Now. So for that reason, I'd say it depends on what you're going through in your life, and maybe it's inspirational and gets
yes.
you through, and then maybe it's time to, you know, it depends on what you're going through. But there's a lot out there.
I believe there's like an oversaturation of quality quotes. Like, I love the quotes from the authors that we follow, like the Deepak Chopras, the Eckhart Tolles, the Don Miguel Ruiz, Four Agreements. Those, like, credible sources. When it's, like, reposted and like for, I'm bringing this up because the other day I was just surfing through and I post inspirational stuff myself, but this particular quote was about relationships, and it was like, find the love. I'll dig it up during the break here. It was like, find the love of your life. Love should be blah 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 perfect and da 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 da. And it was like,
and then you went on vacation. I was doing a puzzle and you were like, that's
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah, no, so here's the thing. I never respond to those things. I never comment. Never, ever, ever. This one, I was so infuriated by it because everyone else was like, this is what's wrong with the world. This is what's wrong with the internet, is these fluffy quotes that are just not realistic, but set people up in a mindset.
For false expectations.
For false expectations
about
love and relationships. And my comment is always this. Do you have children? Are you in a real relationship? Because if those two things are real, then you would take this quote and wipe your butt with it, because that's not true. Love is not about being perfect. Love is not about cutting out everything in your life. Love is about enduring the hardest times, because that's the hard stuff. That's the stuff that love is built on, not just the fluffy, perfect moments.
I couldn't agree more, and I've learned that with you for the last 10 years, but maybe someone who is going through something a little bit different, who maybe is not in a relationship, I could definitely see how it could set up false expectations for people, truly.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe it hits someone in a different way and can help them. I don't know. I'm trying to be positive about it, but I think it's something to think about when you're reading. Just know that everything is not maybe relative and
factual.
Well,
like you said, I think there is times in your life where it hits you at the right time. And that's what this is all about, like hitting you at the right time. Yeah, I know you're laughing.
No, you are dying to
read
this.
I want to move on.
See,
quick.
No, this is why I know that look, and I look down at the text, and I know what you're going to say.
So I'm
going to
fast forward here. And if you have any comments about quotes on Instagram, love to hear it. 312-981-7200. Are you overquoted? Do you feel like there's an oversaturation? Are you tired of hearing the fluffy, inspirational stuff? Love to hear your opinion on this. But before we take a break, I got to address this text that just came in. It's from the 847. Why didn't Frank take the kids back to the when he got tired of the beach? Sherry, why don't you answer that question?
Frank did offer to take the kids back to the house, but it's something that I am working on, and, you know, allowing myself to take time for myself and put myself first. I'm not very good at that.
What did I say to you as you were packing up the beach?
I felt bad to not spend time with the kids. I'm like, it's a family vacation, and so I appreciate this text, because
so do I.
If Frank didn't offer and that was repeatedly what happened, I would it would not be a good thing.
Yeah, thank
but
you.
He did offer, and I just I
thank
have a
you,
hard
847.
Time doing.
Welcome back to the John Williams Show. John is out. We're streaming live on WGN Plus because the Sox are playing right now. Are they winning, Elif? Or should I say, are you Siri? Can you do Siri?
Let me have a look.
Oh, good. Thanks. In the meantime, joining us in the studio is the one and only Phil Battelle. Phil, you got a new restaurant you want to talk about here, or not quite new, but maybe one that has been right. splintered.
Exactly. Up in Winnetka, there was, for a good 14 years, there was a restaurant called Restaurant Michael.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner and chef, Michael Lakowitz, also took part of that restaurant a while back and turned it into a single five-table room called George Trois.
Five-table?
Yeah, very exclusive, 200-something a person for wow. dinner, you know, very, very,
fancy.
Very high-end. And he's got the chops for it, so fine. And then later on, he decided he was going to take Restaurant Michael itself, leave George Trois more or less alone, little redecorating job, and turn it into two different restaurants, the first being Aboye, which is kind of the noisy. Aboye means to bark in French, so by definition, it's a kind of a noisy place, a brasserie, you know, lots of energy, blah 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 blah,
mm-hmm.
and an a la carte menu, and then the smaller part he called Silencieux, which silence,
obviously,
right,
yeah,
it's going to be the quiet one, and that one has like a 5-course menu for $80 or so, $85.
So, do you feel like a concept like that, you know, splitting off, is a obviously, as a restaurateur, he has to have a vision in his mind mm-hmm. from a profitability standpoint to say, still probably one rent, right?
Right.
But three restaurants,
mm-hmm.
probably the same ordering in terms of goods.
Well, that's a good point. It's one of the things he talked about. The tricky balance for him is to have enough similar ingredients that he's not running three inventories at the exact same
mm-hmm.
time. But at the same time, have enough differences between what he's putting on the plate
yes.
at each place.
So they're unique enough.
Right. So there's a reason to go to one restaurant rather than go to the other one. The other one isn't just a restaurant with red paint
right.
or something like that.
So yeah. I think this is brilliant, really, because like you mentioned, so one rent under the same umbrella,
mm-hmm.
but if you sometimes when you really enjoy a restaurant and you enjoy it because the food is amazing, you want to go back there, but you may get sick of it or you want a different experience. So I
right.
feel like you are able to experience the food, but in a different capacity. So I find it to be really interesting and unique.
It's certainly a workaholic's dream.
Yeah,
being a chef over, I assume, one large kitchen, but still having to have all these different things going, the three balls in the air at the same time. He says he's enjoying it. I think it would drive me crazy, but that's probably the reason I don't own one, much less three
right.
restaurants.
It's so true.
And but his pride and joy, of course, is George Trois. That's the restaurant that's the 4-star restaurant. That's the one. But it's a special occasion one. You're going to go there with somebody, and between the two of you, you're going to drop about $500.
Wow. Is that the one with five tables?
Mm-hmm. Right, and two of the tables are two tops, so it's really...
So what is the, is there a wait to get in there?
Maybe six, depending on the evening, no. There may be, but he staggers the reservations to us. He has no interest in having people waiting for their table to show up. You get a reservation.
At that price point, right?
Right. I mean, if you got that table, they're not going to try to get you out of there in another hour because they got somebody coming in. They don't have somebody coming in. That's your table.
Well, I like that he can say, okay, well, that's full.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's booked, but why don't you try this one, perhaps.
Exactly. And so, the yeah. Aboye is the a la carte, so you can go in there, have a drink, have an appetizer, out the door. That's fine. And you can go there a bunch of times, and he wants to encourage that. And then Silencieux is sort of the in-between. The same kind of, a little more formal, closer in concept to George Trois, but at the same time, less than half the price. So you mm-hmm. can afford to go there. A full course meal, a full course, five courses for $85. I'm not going to say that's cheap for a lot of listeners out there. That's a pretty outrageous price, but, you know, compared to the $200+ at George Trois. So he's giving people different thresholds, lower thresholds they have to cross.
It is the private tables with the five tables, is that prefixed? Like
yes, one menu, one set menu, but then you're getting 12 courses. You're getting a little bit of everything, and you're getting the best he's got to offer.
And forgive me, because I don't know this. Is this something that is done, like, in Europe, or is this a common thing? Because I really have never heard of this, but I think it's great.
I don't know enough to say that it's unheard of, but I know enough to say that it's not common.
Not common.
Having a chef have two operations at the same time, that's not unusual, to have a really high end and then a low end. In Chicago, we have Smith, and then underneath that, the Loyalist. And Smith is your full, main course, 200+. And the Loyalist is a cheeseburger. You can get a cheeseburger there and a glass of wine. So those are stacked on top of each other.
Sure.
So there's precedent for that. But this is a different level of ambition, at least for a fairly small operation.
And in Winnetka, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've been to Winnetka a couple times. There's a couple great restaurants down there that I love. Would you say it's risky in that area? Or you got to imagine the executive chef knows the marketplace well enough to think that this is going to fly.
Well, he's been in the area long enough to know. He's been there 14 years, so he's got some history there. Winnetka is a pretty well-to-do community.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A lot of people have serious money out there.
Yeah.
But what I found is people who have serious money didn't get that way by not paying attention to what things cost.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Which is interesting juxtaposition.
Right.
You know?
It's not a Vegas, oh, what the hell, let's get the $300 bottle of wine kind of place. I mean, the people, they've done very well for themselves, but they know value and they understand, and like I said, they didn't get that way by just blithely writing numbers on checks every time somebody asked them to.
Yeah. Hey, Phil, you're in a million different restaurants a year, reviewing and reporting. Do you ever see societal diet trends killing ventures like this? And what I mean by this is, like, the no carb, the low fat, the high fat, the keto, the this, the that. Do these kind of restaurants just transcend all of that, and people don't care when you go to a place like this? Or does the dietary trends of the world affect business?
Oh, I'm sure they affect business. There are some, particularly, especially in the when a new I could say diet fad, but that would offend somebody.
Right.
But when one of these things comes up, there's a little catch up time, and then there's a little. There's also a communication thing. I mean, if you're going with a specific diet because of preference, because of ethics, because of medical need, fine. But you communicate that in advance.
Sure.
You go to a place, people say, oh, I'm gluten-free. Where can I go? Oh, well, any steakhouse in America. We'll start with that.
Just about everywhere today, right?
Sure.
Well, gluten-free is pretty easy to manage unless you're at, Clara's House of Pasta. Then maybe you're going to have to do a little maneuvering.
Yeah.
But other than that, I know chefs for a long time were working on gluten-free pastas. You still find it at places like Maggiano's.
Yes.
They have gluten-free pastas.
Yes.
I think gluten-free pasta is a well-intentioned flop, but it's there for people who really want it. My wife tried gluten-free for a while, and just because it was just kind of feeling better without too much gluten, so she avoids bread. It's not, she doesn't pass out if a loaf of bread comes under her, but she avoids it rather than not.
Does and she join you when you go out to these restaurants?
Sure.
A lot?
Yeah. And anyway, we taste tested a whole bunch of gluten-free pastas, just looking for that magic unicorn that would just make
everything
perfect.
How about gluten-free pizzas?
The gluten-free pizza, I like when people kind of use a mashed cauliflower crust to kind of whip one of those together.
Yeah, which is not easy to make. I've tried often, and I finally have gotten it down, but it's using a lot less than you would think to actually make the crust.
There's so much moisture in the cauliflower that kills the crispiness.
But I could definitely see, like, being a very well-known restaurant that's been around for a long time, and it's a well-known chef, and then not really jumping on the bandwagon of, okay, let's change our menu. Let's now cater to this, kind of going through that whole fad, if you want to call it, until that passes, and until people maybe circle back, or you can just kind of maintain that food throughout.
A good example of the Alinea Group with Alinea's menus and their other restaurant next to the one that changes its concept every 3-4 months. Some of the next menus, they say, we are not able to accommodate gluten-free on this menu, or we're not able to kind of this on that menu. So they do what they can, but they also let people know up front, if this is a major concern for you, this menu is not for you.
Yeah. Phil, are you a particular eater? And what I mean by this is, and my wife can attest to this, when I go to a restaurant, and you're going to pay a decent penny, you kind of want what you want. And sometimes I don't stick to the menu a lot. Like, mm-hmm. I'll see something I like, but then I'll vary from that and be like, hey, could you add this or take away that?
Mm-hmm.
And when a restaurant tells me no, I get very upset by that.
Yeah. Restaurants should, well, first of all, a waiter should never utter the word no under any circumstances.
See?
Unless you're saying, are you having a heart attack right now? And he can say, no, I'm not.
Right.
Okay, that's good. I'd be able to say that. But the three responses to a question, yes, no question, are yes, I'll check with the chef, and I'll find out. Those are your answers.
Yes.
As a server, I would never put it on myself to tell a customer no. I'm getting Mr. Top Toke back there. You tell him no. I'm not getting, you know, what can we do? What can we do?
And right.
It's a rare circumstance where a chef can't accommodate something like that.
That's my point. Is like, I think if you're not accommodating that, you're kind of a jerk.
Well, like, I think sometimes it's probably more often the server than the chef. So if it's an inexperienced server who maybe is timid or doesn't know the answer, instead of saying something like, I'll check, I think they sort of get flustered and don't know the answer and don't have the experience or skills to know what to do,
right.
Which they should in a restaurant. So maybe they need to be trained a little bit.
See,
more.
We're that couple.
Or the chef is a tyrant, and you know better to ask him any questions.
Absolutely, and maybe they're afraid.
I'm without the Wicked Witch of the South's bloom,
yes.
I am not going and talking to this guy
yes.
because he gets mad at me.
Or like if you have shrimp on the lunch menu, and you know you got shrimp in the back, and I want shrimp instead of chicken, but you'll say no because.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff irks me about restaurants.
Yeah. Does that happen a lot?
The reason I'm saying this, have you ever been to Altiero? Yeah, there's one in LaGrange, and I think there's mm-hmm. another one in
Geneva.
Okay, no.
And it's a Latin fusion restaurant, and it's fantastic. The flavors, Phil, you should check it out, are out of this world.
Like, okay.
So we went there. We go there several times for dinner. But they do this weird concept where they change ownership during the day, and then at night it becomes a different restaurant.
It's a timeshare restaurant?
It's basically mm-hmm. a timeshare
yes.
restaurant. Really.
Interesting.
That's what I said, too. We didn't know that, so we went in there one day for lunch, and I wanted what was on the dinner menu.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady's like, no, I'm sorry. I'm like, what do you mean? This is Altiero, right? She's like, yeah, but it's a different owner during the day, a different menu. I'm like, but you have shrimp back there, right? Yeah. We just can't make that.
Right. Because it's the other chef's shrimp.
Right. Don't you dare touch that. That's not your refrigerator.
That's my refrigerator. There's a lock on the door, and you can stay away from my shrimp because I'm running shrimp next week.
Have you heard of concepts like that?
I have never heard of that.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
That's fascinating.
Check it out.
One place does the lunch, and then a whole different everything.
Two partners, and they basically share the space, which, you know, kind of makes sense if you think
sure.
it from a business standpoint, but from a logistics standpoint.
Hey, you'd think they could share a shrimp.
You think they could share a shrimp, right? Or make me my dinner. I want that dinner for lunch.
Now, that said, I will say that some chefs put their menus together with very, very specific decisions having been made.
Yeah.
They think this goes exactly with that, and that goes exactly with that, and they've worked like crazy to get that exactly timed, and then somebody says, you know, can I have this without the puttanesca sauce, but with extra shrimp? And could you put some garlic on toast to make that for me,
yeah.
too? Sometimes that kind of, depending on how the operation runs, depending on how many people are back there, that can affect how flexible they can be
true.
On a busy night. So
I get it.
I'll give them that.
That makes sense, because yeah. I'm thinking about it. It's, I mean, food is a very specific, you have a palate for it, and you like different flavors. But if, you know, you being a designer, if someone will say to you, well, you know what, I like those colors, but I like the other color more.
You know what I would
say?
It
doesn't really go together.
You're paying for it. I'll do whatever
you
want.
But what if you knew it didn't go well together?
You're not going in my book.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not going on the resume, but I will do this in pink polka dots. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God. So how far in advance do you plan out your visits?
About 6 weeks.
6 weeks? So
I mean, the first time I go into a restaurant, the review will probably show up more than a month later.
And you're published weekly or daily?
Yeah, weekly.
Weekly. Nice. And then how long does it take you to write the articles leading up?
Well, it depends on the article, but I spend a day on it.
That's cool. I love that job.
I mean, do a lot of people say that to you? Like, wow,
everybody
your job is amazing.
Me.
Yeah.
Right. My standard answer
but is it really?
Everybody wants my job for 2 weeks, and then they'll give it back to me. Because, you know, the only bad thing about this job is you can never tell anybody what's bad about the job because nobody wants to hear it.
Right. What is bad about the job?
What's bad about the job is that I'm socializing on a Friday and Saturday night is very difficult for me and has for more than 20 years. Because
you mean outside of work.
Exactly. Yeah. So you want to socialize with me, you want to come along and go to dinner. By the way, I'm picking the place and I'm picking the time, and I'm going to tell you what you're allowed to order. So this will be fun.
That sounds fun to be honest with you.
It does, but it gets old, I would imagine.
Yeah, and if you're inviting people with you, are they paying for half the bill, or are you treating?
Well, it depends. But
depends on who it is, probably.
But and how the budget's looking that week. But sometimes sometimes I can't pick the whole thing up.
Well, what
or
is
it's
it?
Like, yeah, you're paying for the wine.
How does that work? Do the restaurants comp you? Or
No.
And you don't tell them you're coming?
Mm-mm. For many, many years, I didn't have my face
out there.
Or anybody could do. So
yeah.
We're coming closing in on the 1-year anniversary of my virtual unmasking.
Coming out, so to speak.
So are you afraid that like in the kitchen, like your pictures posted up in the kitchen?
Yeah, you got a wanted like, sign in the back of every kitchen now.
Frankly, that was true before.
True.
Really?
Yeah. I heard every now and then when I'm getting ready to write the review, we send one of our photographers over to get specific pictures and do all that. So by the time the photographer shows up, I'm already finished with my eating. And every now and then a photographer will take a quick shot of what they've got posted in the back room and show it to me.
That's
amazing.
That's great.
They got you.
So with smartphones today, everyone's got,
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I was at a restaurant once. I was watching a bartender. I said, he's trying to take my picture. He's over there. It's like,
yeah, you're like seriously?
I can't do this all night.
Well, I'm sure you like. I like to hear comments like this, like from the 414. All of my Chicago reservations I get from Phil. I mean, that's got to be the upside of your job.
It really is. It really is.
To hear comments like that.
And mm-hmm.
Do people ever like email you and lambast you about a review? And
well, I get criticism. I have a criticism in my phone today about the restaurant we're talking about because I said that there were sufficient choices, plenty of choices in the prefixed menu at Silencieux. There are five entrees, five appetizers. You can make a meal, and he thought that five choices in each category was minuscule and unacceptable.
Hmm.
So he was not happy.
You tell him that you don't own the restaurant.
I haven't gotten back to him. I just got this like an hour ago.
Do you respond to people?
Usually.
Yeah. That's nice.
Nice.
Phil Vitale, thanks for coming in, buddy.
My pleasure.
Where can people find you on social and online?
Social is I'm just Phil Vitale. I mean, that's even Twitter is at Phil Vitale and Chicago Tribune. It's chicagotribune.com/dining. And nice. I'm lurking around there somewhere.
Can you sneak peek what's coming up next week?
Next week, we are going to be looking at a recent surge in Middle Eastern fine dining restaurants.
Nice.
And not only have a few popped up, but they've proven to be extremely popular. And trying to put my finger on that pulse and see what's going on.
Nice.
Fantastic. We'll be following. Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
That was great. Phil Vitale's given us some behind-the-scenes insight on some of his favorite Italian food restaurants during the little break there. And he mentioned one that I would repeat here is A Tavolo. Right? Is that right, Phil? A Tavolo? Meaning the table in Italian. And that's West Chicago? Anybody's ever been there, I'd love to hear your feedback. 312-981-7200. He says the gnocchi float like air.
Maybe we should bring your parents there.
Ooh, that would be nice.
That sounds amazing.
They're very Italian. Hey, coming up right after the 2 o'clock news with Steve Bertrand, we're going to be talking to two-time Stanley Cup winner, Chicago Blackhawk, Danny the Car Bomb Carcillo will be live on air with us. He'll be talking about the new podcast that dropped today, The Human Renovation Project. He was my first guest. And what an interview. I mean,
his story is fascinating. I mean, you think of, celebrities, sports, successful sports players, and, you envision how their life would be and not really knowing, like, the true story of what, some of these people go through. His story is
it would be shocking. For people who follow the Blackhawks, who have maybe followed his career, you will hear things on this podcast you have never heard before come out of his mouth. The things he'd been through as a kid coming up in the NHL in Canada and the rest of his climb up to success into where he's at today, which, again, will shock you when you hear what's happening to him today. So that's happening. You can find the Human Renovation Project right now on WGN Plus, also on Spotify. The full 1 hour podcast is up there now. Ella, did you listen to it yet? Say yes.
Yeah, I did. It's really good.
Thanks. What was it about? Tell me.
Renovating yourself.
Kind of. It's a very good guess.
I mean, she can't be listening to it and producing.
I didn't say
at
right
the same
now.
Time.
I mean, she has plenty of spare time.
I thought it just launched.
Although John does keep her really busy.
Yeah,
she's
got
to memorize so many things being like that, Alexa voice. Are you Alexa? Is that what it is?
Well, we shouldn't be saying it because then you trigger the you trigger people's smart speakers at home. But so the A word or A-L-E-X-A-A. Yeah.
Speaking of Alexa, I was scanning the internet today, as I do most days, just to kind of get a quick little state of the union of what's going on in the world. And I came across this story, and you probably heard about that Amazon finally gave its Alexa users the option to block recordings of them having sex. Did you know your Alexa, our Alexa, Sherry, is listening to us?
So talk to me about how, first of all, I feel like this, A is always listening, no matter what. It's never turned off.
Mm-hmm.
So is it just that it's always on and that's part of what they're listening to? Or how does it know
that it's... Ask the Alexa expert.
How does it know that it's sex time? Or is it just always listening?
No, because
listening?
According to, I don't think we got it printed out, but according to the story that I read, is that there's humans that actually play back certain portions of recordings to get data. Which helps, quote unquote, them do their job better and respond better. Is that correct, Alexa?
A.
I'm sorry, A.
And yeah, that is correct. I read that. So I think what happens is if you say, hey,
A
name, and you tell it to do something, and then you never unplug it or say Alexa.
A.
Really? Is this the thing that we can't say it?
Because you can't
trigger people's.
Says who? Is this a rule?
Yeah. So if you forget to say A, stop, or I'm assuming, or you never unplug it, yes, people are listening
continuously.
To
so our private. Kids, our kids constantly do this, by the way. So when you see the A with ringing with that ring, like the light going like this and moving,
yes, orbiting. Yeah.
That means it's recording us.
This is the reason why I don't like it. And I would be perfectly fine not having a cell phone with internet, G, whatever it is. I would be completely fine having it nowhere around me.
We just need an E. We need an Elif.
Hey, that's fine.
Who's not connected.
But
knows everything.
Yes, and that would be perfectly fine. But it's invasion of privacy on a major level for me.
Elif, if you had enough cachet and had enough songs in your repertoire, you'd be a good little smart device.
Thanks. I do
John's treating you well. Yes. Mostly useful information.
Yes.
Welcome back to the John Williams Show. I'm Frank Fontana. My wife, Sherry Fontana, sitting next to me, filling in for John. Hi, Sherry.
Hello.
How's it going over there?
Good. It's going.
It's in our second hour here. We're going to be talking to Danny Carcillo, or the car bomb. I think he just fell off the line or something. Danny is part of the 2013-2015 Stanley Cup Blackhawk Champions ring holder. All-around good dude. Met him in person at an event in Florida that he happened to be at. We clicked, started chit-chatting. Had no idea, honestly, who he was when I first met him.
Didn't you ask him to, like, hang a light or something?
Yes. I actually did. It was a sign. Some ladies, like, I was at this event, and we were doing something for the company, and she's like, hey, see that guy over there? And I don't think she meant Danny. It was somebody else standing next to Danny. She's like, see that guy over there? Ask him if he can help you hang the sign. So I go walking over there, and I tap Danny on the shoulder. Didn't know it was him. And next thing I know, he's like, yeah, hey, what's up? I'm like, hey, this lady over there told me you can help me hang the sign. He's like, okay. Do you know who I am or something like that? Or I was like, no. And it was his sign. It was the hockey sign. He's like, that's
oh,
me.
Geez.
I was like, yeah, that's embarrassing.
That was the
I've had a couple
that was
of those.
Breaking the ice.
That was a little breaking the ice moment. That happened to me once before, too, with, you know, Tico Torres from the band Bon Jovi.
I do.
I think I might have told you the story, but, I was at a party in Palm Beach, Florida, and there was a set of drums, like hand percussion drums, and it was, you know, like a lot of people at this party, and I'm over there, like, you know, I play casually, to say best. I just like to, you know, slam the drums a little bit, so I'm sitting there playing, messing around the bongos, and Tico Torres comes walking. I didn't know who it was. He comes walking to me. He's like, hey, you're pretty good, man. I said, yeah, I messed around a little bit. I'm like, you play?
I'm embarrassed for you.
Oh, you should be. I asked Tico Torres, the drummer of the world famous, most selling rock band in the world, Bon Jovi. I asked Tico Torres if he could play drums.
What did he say?
He said, yeah, I play a little bit. And he was so cordial about it. And just nice, and he could have been a real jerk.
I mean, I would assume getting recognized all the time, no matter where you go, is probably refreshing, you know, for someone not to know who you are. And
that's what I picked it up as. I thought he was being super nice about it, and he could have been jerky, and be like, "Do you know who I am?" And it turns out,
like how you would be.
No, I wouldn't. Oh. Like somebody came up to me like at a Home Depot and said, "Yeah, I really wish, you know, I could paint, you know, pick some paint colors and, you know, like whatever," and, you know, or ask them, like, you know, some design advice, and started telling me about, you know, design and whatnot. But anyway, I think we're having a little trouble getting Danny to hang on the line. Is that true, Alifair? Getting some technical issues?
He hasn't picked up yet.
All right. I just text him, so he should be rolling in here shortly. Anyway, Danny, is, as I mentioned a couple times on the show, is a guest on the new podcast that's coming out today. And if he doesn't pick up, we could just kind of fill in the blanks here. But Danny's been through a lot. You know, everyone knows him as the, you know, Stanley Cup winner and, you know, part of the best Blackhawks team in decades.
Tough hockey player who, you know, gets in there and takes care of business. And
you don't get the nickname Car Bomb by being gentle. Like, so he was sent in there to, like, hurt people. But he's a talented player. You know, like, I went back and watched a bunch of his old, you know, highlight reels. The dude scores goals.
Yeah.
Passes. I mean, he's great.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I was shocked, you know, like, when I had this interview with him to find out that he didn't want to be the tough guy. Like, that wasn't, because I asked him, I said, did you have a violent childhood? Like, you know, and the podcast is all about self-transformation. You know, it's about hearing
your story, your truth, your authentic exactly. story.
Completely. And what you have to go through to achieve whatever level of greatness is for you, right? So not everybody on our podcast is going to be uber famous, big sports celebrities. They could be everyday people who have achieved greatness in their chosen field, but have an amazing story of triumph. And I think that's the whole, I know that's the whole, you know, motive of the podcast for me, is to try to draw out from people the truth and don't sugarcoat it. You know, and that's what Danny did for us. He did an amazing, job at just being real and authentic and stuff. Like, I'll tell you one little nugget from it, and I don't want to reveal too much because you can go listen to the podcast on Spotify or WGN Plus. He revealed to me that in his early years, coming up through the Canadian Hockey Leagues, they were with a certain organization in Canada that the coach is, like, renowned. And behind the scenes, he was basically abused by, I think we got Danny calling in right now, actually. It was, like, you know, physically and mentally abused by the coach. And it happened all the time, everywhere.
Well, this is a common thing, you know, with coaches and people in power. Yeah. And I think it comes in all forms. So to hear that, I guess for me, it's surprising because you're in an environment that, you know, it's sports, it's hockey, it's tough. You think of, like, these tough men who, like, could, you know, are very talented, but are in there in the grind. So to hear that that's happening in that environment is shocking and sad at the same time.
It is. Let's hear from the man himself. Danny Carcillo is joining us right now. Hey, Danny.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Danny.
Danny, say hi to my wife, Sherry.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi, I'm good. How are you? Your story's fascinating. Fascinating.
I don't know if you caught any of that, Danny. We were just kind of recapping a little bit of the stuff you and I talked about on the podcast and how we met and all that. And just commending you on your truth, man. I can't thank you enough for the time you spent with us.
Yeah, thanks. Me and Frank met at, of all places, Middleby Marshall in a food convention. So
yeah.
It's amazing him, where you meet and paths cross.
And yeah. I was telling him the story of, like, I went up to you and I'm like, "Hey, buddy, you know, some lady told me to ask you to help me hang this sign." And you were like, "What? What are you talking about?" It was actually it was a poster of you, I think, that I was holding.
Yeah, I told you where to put it, though.
You did. Politely, you told me where to put it.
No worries.
How you hanging in there, buddy? I've been following you on social media and I post our interview, and I've seen some great stuff coming out of your side there and some new advances in your treatment.
Yeah, so doing a lot better. About just a little over 8 weeks ago. Made a decision and after listening to a podcast to check my hormones with an endocrinologist who's is specific to TBI victims. So it works a lot with veterans, police officers, you know, people that are athletes, ex-former professional athletes, and people that have sustained head trauma. To check my pituitary gland, my four major hormones, pituitary gland, which usually with repetitive head trauma, it's subject to trauma just because of where it sits in relation to the skull, which is in a rigid area, as well as our my thyroid. So found out some really good information about why I wasn't sleeping, and my cortisol levels were seriously off, and I actually had the free testosterone of a 70-year-old male, I'm not too proud to say, but just knowing that information is really important, and then getting on non-statin, all-natural pills each day, and basically a protocol, a regimen for, it's actually 2 years, and that's why I haven't really spoken too much about it. I want to really give it, you know, 365 days, and but it's going really well. Sleeping great. Better, and that is the, I've really delved into, like, some research on sleep, because that's when we recover in our REM cycle, and so I wasn't achieving that with my cortisol levels, so those have since come down, and so yeah, just you know, spending a lot of time in nature and doing a new venture, and spending time with my three beautiful kids and beautiful wife, and yeah, just enjoying this beautiful summer in Chicago.
What I really find, I would say, most fascinating about your story and really about your journey is that, you know, anyone could get out there and speak about what they've been through, but I really find it, you know, fascinating that you keep going and you're looking for new ways and you're looking, you know, to grow and find a way to really, you know, be the best you. And what motivates you? You know, you talk about your children. That's probably a big one there. But what motivates you and what inspires you to really, you know, keep on that path? Because I know it's not easy.
Yeah, it's not. And, you know, I've taken a break from social media. But, you know, me and Frank recorded this a while ago. So I obviously wanted people to see it. It was an important conversation. But what keeps me going is just trying to find peace and trying to heal from basically the lifestyle and the environment that I put myself in and that I was subjected to. And so I'm really just trying to heal so that I could be, again, like you mentioned, the best father I can be and husband and really just a normal operating human being, you know. And so just trying to get that peace, and with finding that is different ways of healing. And you know, one of the things other than checking my hormones that's really helped me is plant medicine. And so just these all natural remedies, and it's not just those two things, it's also changing my diet and being conscious of what I'm putting in my body and
exercise,
making sure I'm outside. So
Danny, what do you,
the lifestyle that we lived was really, really, it was fast. And so, I described the real world as kind of a little bit slower, and you have to kind of get down to that vibration or else you just won't heal. You won't heal. So,
you're saying a lot of amazing stuff. Like if you pick up in between the lines, the words like vibration and, you know, things like that, I could tell from our conversation 2 months ago to today, you sound like a different person. Like you had some darkness going on, you know, even 2 months ago that seems a bit lighter. And I want to touch on something you mentioned here. Two things. Diet. I want to know what you're eating now. And two, getting into a little bit of the psilocybin and or the, you know, stuff you're diving into with the mind.
Yeah, so again, it goes back to you know, just recognizing what sugar does to you, processed foods, and just recognizing to, you know, I'm growing my own vegetables, I'm growing my own food, I'm eating all organic, I'm trying to stay away from fried foods. I'm not perfect, obviously there's some days when I go back to it, but it's a really good lesson because then in the morning I kind of wake up a little groggier. So just really recognizing what works with my body. And then, yeah, to your point, you have to find a way to heal, and I've tried everything. I tried absolutely everything. And 2 months ago, Frank, to your point, when we were when we were speaking, I wasn't in a very good place, and it was, you know, my lifestyle and the way that my perception of the world and how I was carrying myself was really weighing on me, and so I was at a breaking point. And so when you're at a breaking point, you usually turn to, you know, a higher power of some sort, and that's what I did. And plant medicine is really, it can really help you achieve, number one, homeostasis, and then number two, the biggest thing it did for me was now I felt unconditionally loved again. So the way that I describe it is, you know, you have this awakening and kind of like an ego death, and your perception starts to shift when you come back to this physical body and this physical world, and you've achieved some type of and some level of peace, and that's what it did for me. And now, you know, moving forward, you're a little bit more empathetic, and again, just when you're at the right vibration and you're not always in your fight mode, so that default mode isn't always, you know, pumping adrenaline like it was when I was always on social media. You know, once that default mode is corrected and you're not waking up fighting and looking at your phone and, you know, getting into a fight on social media, like, it really can carry through the day. And being in nature is really important. And then, you know, also talking about it, and I will talk more about it. It's, you know, this is obviously the first time I've spoken in an interview about it, but, you know, people need to know about this option because it really does help. I implore people to go to the MAPS organization website and the studies that they're doing. They're in phase 3 studies with the FDA with treating veterans with PTSD with MDMA. It's 3 administrations of MDMA coupled with 12 weeks of psychotherapy. So it's not just about, you know, taking these drugs. There's work to be done, you know. So
for those who don't know what MDMA is, why don't you give just a quick little description of it? Because I'm into it. I know exactly what you're saying, but I would imagine some people may not.
I don't want to delve into that. You know, again, go to, if people are listening and they want more information, there's a ton of medical studies that back up plant medicine and the science behind it. So I implore you to go look at those studies and take it from
MAPS.
MAPS, yeah.
Okay.
And take it from the doctors, you know, that have conducted these studies and have treated people and gotten them off of nicotine, you know, at a 70% rate, I believe it is, and then 60% after 2 years. So it's really powerful stuff. And if you're at a point where you're having suicidal thoughts and nothing that you're doing is working and you're in just a really dark place, and you look around your life and you have 3 beautiful kids and people surrounding you that love you, and you know, you know something's off, well, and you've tried everything else, you know, it could plant medicine and going inside and looking at what your body's naturally creating, like those two things can really help people.
That's some beautiful stuff, Dean. I know you're making my wife tear up over here.
Hearing it is, you know, people can relate to you, I think, you know, on a smaller level, just day-to-day, you know, demons and things that people fight with every day. And just hearing that you have something to give you, you know, where you don't have to fight so hard for that clarity or peace is really, you know, great to hear. And then I also, you know, I've had some health things along the way, and, you know, what I always tell people is, I almost feel lucky to be able to go through a healing process, because you're at a point where you do break and you either can go to a really dark place or you can choose to heal, and that journey could be really rewarding. It's very, very hard, but healing could be rewarding. So if you choose that path, it's, you know, I can relate to that feeling of, you know, being able to keep going and go through that healing process can be rewarding.
Not easy, but it's worth it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely worth it. I remember somebody when I was trying to go through my first healing process and get off of opiates at a point in my career, somebody told me, you know, there's usually 3 options, you know, there's death, there's institutions, or you get better. You know, and institutions, jail, rehab. So you know, I needed to hear that at that point, and that's the reality, you know. And I wanted to get better because with traumatic brain injury, and if you're not predisposed to these mental health complications or issues or a mental illness from a young age, you know, when they hit you, it can be really confusing and it can be really difficult to come out of it if you don't have a set of tools. So obviously, after I take this time to take care of myself, I'll come out and talk about this stuff more in depth.
We can't wait, Danny. And again, thanks so much for your honesty, your candidness, and taking the time to spend with me here as well as on the Human Renovation Podcast that's live today. You can go hear Danny's full story, our one-hour sit-down, one-on-one conversation that's a little bit of what you're hearing and a lot more that you're not. And that you can find that on WGN Plus as well as Spotify, and it'll be out on iTunes everywhere else by the end of the week, going global after that. So, Danny, thanks so much, buddy. And, you know, big things coming, but we're all in your camp rooting for you.
I appreciate it. Nice to meet you, Sherry. And thanks, Frank.
You got it, bud. We'll talk soon. Welcome back to the John Williams Show. I'm Frank Fontana, sitting next to me, my lovely wife, Sherry Fontana.
Hello.
He's doing a fantastic job, I might say.
Thank you.
Coming from a TV background.
Yes, my big television career.
I recognize her from the hit A&E television show, Downtown Chatty, where she and I hosted the show.
My long-standing career in television.
Your long-standing media empire that you've built. But hey, this is now what, your fifth radio appearance?
I haven't counted, but it's
getting up there.
Yeah, I enjoy it. Nice. I don't know if you do, because I'm next to you.
Well, you know,
just saying it like it is.
Saying it like it is. It's your wife. You know, you try to leave all your other stuff out of the studio, but somehow, you know, you're still, it's your husband and wife. So, you know, you care. So if she looks like she's off, I'm like, are you okay? When like so this is what happens during a commercial break. I'm like, are you okay? Things are all right? So if she has like a serious look on her face where she's distracted, I'm like trying to figure out what's wrong with her.
And I have the headphones on and pretending not to hear you.
Yeah, I know. But I know you can hear me because I've been doing radio for 10 years. And
no, so but the reality is people don't want to hear our
you know. I beg to Elif, would you want to hear that?
Hear what, though?
I don't know.
Right, I feel like a little bit of banter, but, you know, people are not tuning in to listen to Frank and Sherry.
They might be.
You know, relationship.
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? But they might want to hear this. We left off talking about this article that was on Drudge Report. He went to jail as a fake doctor. Now he's a real one. The saga of Adam Litwin, MD. Now he's a Chicago doctor who, back in the day, dreamed of being a doctor. Went to school at UCLA, was killing it, and it got too much. He put himself in a position where he walked around with a lab coat or doctor's jacket, a white coat, and had a fake badge, and started doing rounds with students and stuff into real patients. And when he was asked questions, he'd be like, this is quoted from the article, he was so good that he could give a quick answer in like 3 seconds. But the charade didn't last. His unusual white coat raised suspicion because he got it from like a pharmaceutical convention. He drew the attention of a pharmacist when he forged prescriptions for cough remedies and tranquilizers in the name of another UCLA physician who shared his surname. According to the Times article from 2000, Litwin says he wrote the prescriptions to help a friend.
So this seems tricky.
Yeah.
Because it started out as, you know, a childhood dream, you know, wearing the lab coat. You know, it was in his family, it was around him, so I think he took a liking to, you know, the medical field. But then it did go further into him pretending to be a doctor. But I feel like, you know, when you become a doctor, you take an oath to help people and to have people's best interest.
Yeah.
You know, while you're working. So, I mean, after...
But he wasn't a doctor yet. That's the thing.
Well, I think it doesn't really matter at this point because everyone talking about it, no one's going to really go to him in Chicago anyway, so he'll probably have to move to another state.
That's. Is it unfortunate or is it just... Can you chalk it up to stupid things you do when you're in college? Elif, what do you think about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, people go on their hijinks all the time, especially in college, I'd say. I mean,
but medical school and you know, imposturing, you know, being a basically...
That's a crime, so I think that that's a pretty high-level prank right there. It's a crime. So, I don't know.
It would be really hard for me to overlook. I would have a hard time with it. You know, I don't know what type of work he's doing now, but if he was like the top surgeon and, you know, you had a disease that he really could cure and it was based on facts that he was really great at what he does, maybe consideration, but I would have a hard time with it.
What was his motive with doing that?
Over exuberance? I don't know.
Like, I think he just got, you know, caught in the glamour of, you know, being respected, being a doctor. It was his dream, and I think he just got caught in that, you know, in that spotlight of becoming something that he wasn't, and then just took it way too far.
I think depending on the motive, if he was just really ambitious and he wanted to just his face to be seen in the school and around the hospital hallways, then I would probably forgive him because he now actually is a doctor and he's earned his certification.
Yeah.
And his title.
Like, but he put his time in, basically.
Yeah, but if it was for the reason that you just mentioned, Sherry, then I would not be as excited to go if it was a vanity reason.
Well, it had to. I mean, a college, again, he could have been the smartest kid in the class, but he was kind of stupid for risking his entire career. He's lucky he even got his license after that. I'm shocked that he was able to, you know?
Well, I guess another way to think about this is, what if it wasn't in the medical field and wasn't as a doctor? And what if he was pretending or, you know, to be, I don't know, an architect or...
Let's say a trader. Let's say he was pretending to be a trader before, you know, the computers took over the board of trade. Let's just say he went and made a whole bunch of money for somebody.
I'm just thinking, is it more acceptable if it wasn't the medical field where you're treating people, you know, for their health? I don't know.
I would think so, only because you put...
It's still the same act, though.
Yeah, put it in the context
morally.
Of a different career path, different industry that doesn't require personal interaction on such a deep level with someone's health and emotions, and, like, you know, like, there's so much tied up to being a doctor that's beyond just, let me prescribe medicine. It's, you know, caring for their life and their health. So I feel like there's that level of emotion that's attached to it versus, you know, like, let's say you're a street hustler who can make some money and, you know, you became a good deal maker, but then you got arrested for doing something not so right. And then you end up becoming one of the best entrepreneurs out there. And you're now doing business with the biggest of the biggest. I'd probably be more forgiving about that guy than this.
So maybe it's maybe it's less acceptable for something that requires an actual license, like a teacher, that requires a degree, that requires education. So if it's like the medical field, teaching, maybe it's less acceptable because you're actually pretending to know more than you do.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's tricky.
I get it. You know, it's a tough one. I mean, I think at the end of the day, if this guy has a striving practice, then maybe, you know, time did pass enough and he learned. He says in the article that, you know, he said, you know, if I could, you know, write one thing, it is a very wise man who learns from his mistakes and a very stupid one who doesn't. Remember that I've learned from my mistake, and that's why there's no chance that anything like that would ever happen again.
Well, this is, we just received a text from 847 airline pilot.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm not getting in that plane. I would be really upset.
Agreed.
I don't love to fly.
Very good career segue.
What if someone hops in the airplane and it's like, I can do this, and they aspire to be a great pilot?
What's that movie? What was it? Elif?
Don't look at me. I don't know.
It was with Leonardo DiCaprio, where he like plays. He's a pilot, like, but he's not really a pilot. He just pretends to be one.
I don't remember what it's called, but I know exactly.
Catch Me Now or something like that. What is it?
Catch Me If You Can.
Catch Me If You Can. That's it. That was a good movie, and that's basically what this was for this doctor, or this wannabe doctor.
It's just not cool.
Agreed. I think generally it's not cool. Did he redeem himself, you know, get his education, get his license back in order? Yes. Can I respect that as a guy who loves underdogs and second chances? Yes.
Can you imagine if you were an actual doctor? And who worked hard, you know, that community must really.
That's what I'm saying. It's a tough one.
That. Yeah.
And that's why it made national news. Like, this is on Drudge Report, national news, international news. So who knows what's going to be the fallout of this article? I'd love to follow up on this in the next couple of weeks to see how this thing plays out. But well, whatever. Anyway, hey, coffee drinkers. Anybody here drink coffee?
Yes.
Me too. Now, you ever hear, I know my mother says this, or my, you know, most parents say, I can't drink coffee past, like, you know, 8 o'clock because I won't be able to sleep. Mm-hmm. Do you ever hear that line?
Yes, your mom and dad always say
mom.
That.
And your mom,
no,
too.
My mom does, too. My mom does. If it's, like, past 3 o'clock, I guess the assumption is that coffee, which would be the caffeine in the coffee, right?
Yes.
Keeps you up at
yes.
night.
Well, here I am about to debunk that whole myth. So you can drink coffee, Elif, all night long. Because drinking coffee close to bedtime does not stop you from sleeping. You know what does?
Too much thinking.
That too.
Definitely. Worrying.
Cell phones. But
yes.
What the study says from the Daily Mail, it's alcohol and nicotine that keep you up, study finds.
Yeah, nicotine was the most strongly linked to insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
Nicotine.
Researchers studied 785 people for over 14 years monitoring their sleep habits. They found that coffee was not strongly linked to sleeplessness. Like you said, nicotine was. But what about the people who don't take nicotine or smoke or, you know, tobacco? I wonder if that plays into the study at all.
Well, regardless, so is it true that, you know, caffeine doesn't keep you up then in general?
I mean, you think about it, right? Caffeine, what does it do? It kind of gives you that kick, that buzz, you know, gives you a little bit of energy. But is it enough energy that keeps you from falling asleep? I can tell you this. I've had espresso before bed. I can go right to sleep. Like, it doesn't affect me at all.
Well, and I think people just get something in their mind and think that, you know, that's what it is. And they could, or if, you know, you can't sleep one night and you think, oh, I had that cup of coffee.
You blame it on the one thing.
You'll never have the coffee again.
Yep.
As opposed to, you know, something else that you did that day.
But that's, I just thought for all you coffee lovers out there, that was a good little nugget of info that you could have your coffee as long as you're not taking alcohol and or smoking cigarettes too close to bed. That's probably your culprit versus your cup of coffee.
That's why I don't like drinking very much. Apart from the hangover, apart from it being bad for you in general, it's because it cuts my sleep.
Yeah.
Every single time, no matter how tired I am from the drinking of the night, from the libations, I always wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and then I'm done. That's it. I can't sleep anymore.
So I would love to know, like, if is that a personality trait or is it the actual alcohol? Because for all these years, I thought that, you know, you drink a lot and people pass out, you know, like you go right to bed.
I've never passed out from drinking.
Okay, not passed out, like fall on the ground. But like,
people do. I don't, you know, people.
I mean, I went through a period where if I had, you know, drinks in my 20s or 30s or whatever it was, I could sleep forever. Like, I just loved sleeping at that point. So I just wonder.
It's lack of responsibility.
So, Elif, if you don't drink, do you still wake up at that time or can you sleep longer?
I can sleep longer. Much
what's your average wake-up time?
8.
Wow.
On a weekend.
I'm lucky if I can get up later than 6.
Well, you have kids, so that changes everything.
But I'm up at 5:30 anyway.
Yeah, he's regardless of what time the kids get up, he's always up.
My best hours are 5:30 to like 10:30. I'm the most creative. Like, I can write a book in that time.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm more like that at night.
I'm not. I shut down at like 8. My brain stops working.
I'm a late morning person.
Yeah, Sherry needs her cup of coffee. Don't talk to her before that.
That's definitely not true.
Not deep conversation. It could be very light conversation. Like, how did you sleep, honey?
I mean, you definitely don't say that to me in the morning.
Every morning, how did you sleep?
Well, you said, how did you sleep, honey?
Not like that, but
how'd you sleep?
How'd you sleep?
Yeah. But I don't think anyone wakes up and wants to have like a deep conversation.
Yeah, so I was staying with my aunt over my vacation, and I always wake up with a really weird-sounding voice. It sounds like this.
You do?
Yeah.
Like you smoked a pack of cigarettes before
totally,
bed?
Totally. So I go up to her, and I'm like, Auntie. And she's like, what's wrong? Are you sick? And it's because I'm not used to talking until a later time, and like mid-morning is when I'm ready to talk.
Yes.
That's shocking to me, because you have such a clear, pronounced voice that...
I know. I drink my coffee first, so yeah. That helps.
Smoke your cigarettes, drink your coffee.
Yeah.
How many cups of coffee do you have in the morning?
Me? In my mug?
In your mug, yes.
Total about 2.5 or 3.
So you only drink one mug of coffee?
Yeah, a mug. And then I come here and maybe have one more at the most. How about you guys?
So I make a French press. Sherry drinks Nespresso. She's very fancy.
That's nice. So I don't like coffee. I realize that I don't even enjoy coffee. What I enjoy is the steamed coconut milk. So I really can't say that I like coffee, but I do like the coconut milk that goes along with it.
This is true.
Just to be honest. But if I had to have a cup of coffee with a regular creamer or like milk, whatever, I wouldn't enjoy it.
Yeah, I understand that. But I think the argument about coffee making you not able to sleep is interesting, because there's a coffee nap, which is where you drink a cup of coffee and then right away you go to sleep for 15, 20 minutes and you wake up feeling like completely refreshed.
This is an actual thing?
That's an actual thing.
Where? When? Send me the article.
Well, my dad told me about it, and then this author of a book that's all about your daily energy told us about it.
Cool.
That's interesting. Yeah. I like to hear that.
Speaking about interesting topics, tomorrow we'll be here again filling in for John Williams on the street. On the stream again tomorrow, Elif? Are we on regular air tomorrow?
Stand by.
I want to say possibly on the stream again, which means there might be another White Sox game.
White Sox are off tomorrow.
White Sox are off, so we're actually going to be on the air.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you, Lauren.
Oh, you know, I'll always have the answers for that that category.
Cool. All right. So tomorrow we're going to be talking to the producer and director of a brand new documentary that is climbing the charts on all sorts of streaming platforms. It's called Fat, the documentary. Peter Pardini is going to be here, who, by the way, his father is the lead guitarist for the iconic band Chicago. Peter's going to be joining us to talk about the new documentary, and it's fascinating. Sherry, you have to watch it.
Wait, tonight. I can't wait to watch
the guitarist of Chicago?
The band Chicago.
Sorry, Sherry.
Yes, his son.
His son.
Directed the documentary.
Of the same name, Peter Pardini.
Are you a Chicago fan?
I mean, I'm not like, but I am like, whoa.
Yeah,
cool.
Oh, God, we got to get you tickets then. He's going to be joining us tomorrow. It's going to be a great interview, and he's going to talk about, because it's like just came out, this documentary. It's blowing up. And you can Google it right now if you want to watch it. You got to watch it tonight.
Yeah, I'm so interested in, you know, is it plant-based? Is it keto? Is it meat? Like, I am so on the fence with all of this, so I love gathering as much information as possible. But this is just another kind of like layer that, because I love to be all plant-based, and now as I'm introducing meat back in, I feel great. So I don't know. It's very confusing to me. So I do want to watch this and learn more about
this. May sway you in a different direction. I watched it last night, and I got to say that I'm not one to jump on a bandwagon. I like to try lots of different things. And this one, to me, makes the most sense from a cognitive standpoint, because the whole documentary, and I don't want to get too deep into it, but is about the idea that Americans' diet standards have been so wrong for so many years that it's not about fat being bad. It's about what fat and basically the ketosis and the keto diet programs have done on a medical level for kids with epilepsy and all sorts of brain damage. You know, that's why I wanted Danny Carcillo to get a little bit into the diet, because I was wondering if he was going into the keto.
Yeah.
Because the more your brain works better on fat and collagen and protein. So anyway, lastly, there's two things I want to talk about before we head out of here. We got Rose coming up next, right? But as a mom, Sherry, I saw this article on BuzzFeed that I thought was perfect for you. Do you have any money-saving mom scams? And what I mean by this, let me give you some context here. Like a mom who loves a good deal, a good legal scam, if you will. Maybe you're a mom who has multiple email accounts to get free trials or free shipping on something. Or maybe a kid who has a mom that goes to extreme lengths to save money in really weird ways. Perhaps your friend's mom has a scam she thinks is just brilliant. Like, you know, for instance, going into Starbucks with an empty Starbucks cup saying you just need a refill and only paying $1 for a $4 cup of coffee. You know, is there ways that you hack?
So this is not my world.
Okay.
Because I would feel awful going into like a Starbucks. I would be embarrassed to go into Starbucks with like a cup that I found or someone gave me and asked for free coffee.
But like, would you be a mom if like you knew there's a coupon that you'd get? Or like, would you go to Dunkin' Donuts on the free Dunkin' Donut day like several times? Would you go back in line?
Not even a question. Yeah. I will tell you this. If it was something for the kids, like, oh, you can get this great deal on their school supplies or something that they really wanted or loved, I would go further than I would go for, you know, just like a cup of coffee. I'm not comfortable doing things like this.
I'd love to hear what the folks think. 312-91-7200. Do you have any mom scams, like legal mom scams, you know, that you try to get one over on the man and try to save a buck for your family? Love to hear it and post it. And if not, we'll put it on Facebook if we don't have time to get to it. But I just love that topic. Ella, if you're not a mom, did your mom, though, pull any of this kind of stuff to try to save a buck here and there?
Yeah, I'm sure she had some savvy methods for saving money, but...
So I bet a lot of people wouldn't want to admit it.
You know what I do like? Like, if we were going on vacation, I would like to start, like, you know, putting cash away. Like, I'm very good at planning that type of thing, or I'd drive a little bit further to, like, get a cheaper something. But yeah. I wouldn't repeatedly try to, like, scam the system.
Right, like, you know, like...
Probably because it's not... I mean, unless I was saving quite a bit, it'd have to be worth what I'm saving.
Yeah, you're a good person. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break, and then we come back. I have one final question for you and Elif and the listeners out there that I think is going to rattle your brain a little bit. So, get ready. Welcome to the John Williams Show. It's a beautiful song. It's my wife Sherry Fontana's favorite song here.
So that is so funny. Thank you for doing that.
And reason why is because I thought of this question a few weeks ago, and we're at a party, and I posed it to a bunch of people, and they were like stumped, and they couldn't think of the answer. And
mine came quick.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you guys, too. Anna's here, too.
Hey, Sherry.
Hi.
So, this is perfect timing, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not really known for that, so that's very exciting. Perfect. You're here.
So, why don't we start with our guests? Well, not really a guest, but our, you know. This is the question. If you knew that in the next hour you were going to lose your hearing forever... What one song would be your last song you could listen to? And you have one song.
Well, that's loaded, because I don't think it would be your favorite song. I think for me, it would have to be like a soothing song or a song that has such range it reminds you of the beauty of music.
Which is true, because one of my favorites, but that's not my actual favorite.
But listen, that's not the rule. The rule is the last song you will hear before you can never hear anything again.
I would say it'd be something like symphony music for me. Mm-hmm. I played the violin growing up, not that I ever achieved any success at it, but I have an appreciation for it.
So yeah. That and type of...
Just to hear musicians, true musicians play, I don't think it would necessarily be the voice.
So that's interesting. It wouldn't necessarily be words. It would just be beautiful sound for me.
It wouldn't be like Pearl Jam, like one epic song that reminds you...
No, I mean, I have plenty of songs that are popular songs that I just love. I mean, I love everything from... Donna Summers or Barbara Streisand, the current music. I mean, I just, you know, but I just wouldn't, there's not just one that would do it for me. I think it would more be like just the hearing different musicians play in symphony.
And yours was Caruso, right? Okay, why?
I love the sound of his voice. I love, it takes me to a different place where I am able to relax and envision and just really listen to the beauty of the sound of his voice and the tone of the music.
Elif?
I think I'd want to hear my mom or my grandma or my aunt playing piano and singing.
Oh, interesting. See? That's sentimental.
Yeah. I had a famous group Above and Beyond, the lead singer Pavo, said the same, that he would compose a song with his children to hear his children's voice for the last time. I asked you this question.
I like that answer.
He's going to love
this
question.
Did you hear the question? Not. All right, so if you knew in an hour... You were never going to be able to hear anything again, and you were allowed to play one song.
I have that, by the way. I always have that fear.
You do?
Yeah.
You've had an earache lately.
I've had an ear infection, so yeah, I think it's going to happen. Yeah, go ahead.
So
my hypochondriac. But
sorry to jinx you there.
He's thought through this. He's the only one who's already thought through this.
Yeah, I already have an answer. Yeah.
What would be your final song to send you off in a way that, whatever it means to you, whether it's just like, epic I'm going to go down with, like Metallica or, you know.
Oh, I'm thinking Twisted Sister.
We're not
going to take it. Yeah, I think Dee Snider would. But I'd have Dee Snider actually come and sing it to me.
Yes.
He'd do that.
Yeah, and he would do that. For the right dollar amount, mm-hmm. I could get Dee Snider to show up and sing it to me, and that would be it. Good night, everybody.
Yeah.
That's good enough. That is, Frank, what the hell kind of question is that?
A serious dark twisted one.
This is what happens at my house. I'm not joking.
Sherry, swear to God, what's wrong with him?
Randomly, I'll get these questions, and I'm like, I'm not the type that could just answer it. I have to, like, really think about it. So I'm like, I don't have
because
time to think
so
about this.
Because it's so poignant. Like, if you really think about this,
I don't
right?
want poignance. It's 3 o'clock.
That's true.
It's sunny.
He wants the Carnarvon one.
I need that. You could lose your hearing from that, too.
Mine would be Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the Hawaiian version.
Well, you're not passing away.
What's his name? The dude.
The big dude.
Well, he's gone. Yeah.
Don Ho?
But Don... No, not Don Ho.
The big guitar guy. I forget his name.
But anyway, to the point of emotion and feeling, I'd want to feel that, like, peace.
Would that bring you to a good place?
It would.
Then you should listen to it every morning.
Why do you have to ask him that? Aren't you two married?
Can't you tell?
I like that. She asked a question. Would that take you to a good place? This is like being in your kitchen.
Well, my point was every day listen to that then.
Right. And then you should just play that all the time. Hey, Frank, quiet for a second. We'll just play this.
Yeah, wake up, and I want to hear that when I wake up.
Yeah.
Anyway, what do you guys got coming up?
We have important things coming up.
Very important things, yes. Including Chance the Snapper has a great setup in Florida. You will not believe what a celebrity Chance is now, the alligator that's moved down there. So
wow.
Ben Bradley will tell us all about that.
And we have Congressman Kinzinger is going to be with us. He's made a lot of news.
He
by
has.
By being one of the two Republicans who is standing up right now for some gun control legislation. His is, his is pretty simple. Universal background checks and moving the age to 21.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like...
Doesn't stop crazy people from being crazy, though.
Yeah. Well, that's true. But then the question becomes, you know, do you not do something here? You know, we didn't do anything after Sandy Hook. Do we not do something now when you got...
Like, when is it time to do something?
Yeah, is there ever a time to do something? If there's not a time to do something, then we just decide, hey, this is the price of being an American. Mm. Is that it?
Yeah.
We give up?
No, I need that happy song. That you
please. Come on, why?
It's out on something happy.
Yeah. All right.
Well, you guys have a good show.
Thanks. It's a time where that's the bathroom break time. This is Ariana Grande. And the bathroom break at a Barbara Streisand show is about 6 hours.
Can you imagine the wait?
Yeah.
For both the men and the women, I bet.
Right.
Yes.
And as I said, there's... Oh, no, my God, for the...